I heartily endorse this event or product.
Ahoy, ahoy, everybody. Welcome to Talking Simpsons, proud supporter of the perverted arts. I am your host, Bob Buttzilla Mackey, and this is the Laser Time Podcast Network's chronological exploration of The Simpsons. Who else is here with me today?
Henry Gilbert, and I make it a point not to turn my head unless I expect to see something.
Who else?
Pervoided artist Chris Antista.
Awesome,
it's
we all know that.
Different.
Who else?
I'm Dave Rudden, and I'm terribly sorry.
And today's episode is Bart's Comet. Uncannily sounds like a baby ox. Today's episode aired on February 5th, 1995, and as always, Chris will tell us what happened on this mythical day in real-world history.
Oh boy, Bobby! The Jerky Boys bring their timeless form of comedy to the big screen in their own movie, and The Simpsons receive some stiff competition in the ratings department. Not only did the Golf Channel premiere this week, but after its September 1994 debut, ER begins a five-year streak of being the most watched show on television.
Wow, that show was such an event show. They pitched it like movies. They're like, this is going to be a movie, and like we're going to have Quentin Tarantino direct an episode.
It's even weirder that I've never seen it. Mm-hmm. It is in contention with only Seinfeld during that five-year period. Seinfeld is on multiple channels every single day. I have never seen ER in syndication ever, and there are 15 years of it.
Yeah, I remember not too long ago being surprised that ER was still on TV. Like, what? Who was watching
it
this?
It lasted until like 2009, I think.
Yeah.
Until it had no original cast members.
Yeah, even Eric LaSalle couldn't stick around.
I want to go back to the Jerky Boys movie, though, because I assume we're all white guys who grew up in the 90s. Yeah. Uh-huh. We had to all have loved the Jerky Boys.
Yes.
Is that true?
Yes. Would you believe I actually went to see this in theaters?
Oh, my God.
No way.
I rented it on VHS, and I was like, oh, this is a waste of $3.
There were like three other people in that theater, and it's one of those movies that I don't know if it's out on DVD yet, but it took a long-ass time to get there.
I own the soundtrack for some reason.
Is it phone calls, or is it actually
It's music, including Tom Jones covering Lenny Kravitz. Are You Gonna Go My Way? Are You Gonna Go My Way?
It could have been a better movie if they had just taken the characters those people played and made them a movie around them, but it's like, no, we're gonna watch this guy make a phone call and make someone angry.
If I'm not, they treat prank phone calling like a superpower.
Yeah.
That can topple organizations.
And Saul Rosenberg, I think was his name.
Saul Rosenberg.
He's basically a character on Family Guy now.
I thought someone said he is a voice actor.
That's the same voice actor. Basically the same character.
Isn't he Mort Rosenthal?
Saul Rosenberg is the Jerky Boys character.
Yeah. Mort Rosenthal is the Family Guy.
Saul Rosenberg has warts on his ass and genitalia.
There was an ugly split between the Jerky Boys. I think one of them did not want to be as famous and was kind of not comfortable performing, and Johnny Brennan, I think, is the guy who does most of the voices. I mean, he does a great assemblage of racist stereotypes.
It's our generation's two live Jews.
I had friends who listen to the Jerky Boy stuff. I never had a Jerky Boy CD.
I'm the same.
Oh my gosh. I had like three of them.
I had the Adam Sandler CDs.
Those.
Yeah. The Tollbooth Willie. There, he's going to tell him he's got a small dick.
I loved Fatty McGee.
Yes. Mm-hmm. That was the height of comedy, kids.
Mm-hmm. Yes. We're all much happier now. So,
but this is the height of comedy for some reason.
Yes.
This is my favorite episode. I've told on other podcasts I've mentioned I went through a period of being obsessed with UFOs and astronomy and using telescopes a lot and staying on my roof hoping I'm visited by alien visitors or discover something that's never been discovered, being still kind of young through Bart's eyes. Him getting to discover something amazing. I don't know. I love this episode.
This was the first time I had seen this premise in any kind of fiction. I'm sure it existed before, but Deep Impact and Armageddon would be 3 years later. Like the two matching asteroid movies or meteoroid movies.
I think they joke on the commentary that all of Hollywood saw like a cover to a news story of like, what if a meteor came to America or crashed New America like in time? And so everybody wrote their thing, but they could just produce The Simpsons faster than Armageddon and Deep Impact could be made.
But in terms of like, I think it's only because they make a note of it in the Simpsons episode guide because they call them like VCR jokes or something to that effect of like, there's a ton of visual things in here that you can't possibly notice on first viewing and you notice better with a VCR.
It's an incredibly dense episode. It has earned emotion in it too. And it is, it's almost like the Simpsons movie in that the entire town comes together to face annihilation too in that way. This was, I said before the before we started doing the show, this was my favorite to remember. I remember this was ranked as my favorite. I think this has replaced Mr. Plow as my favorite that we watched. Yeah, like, this is my new favorite.
I always say some of my favorite episodes are when the residents of Springfield all go nuts. And not only do they all go nuts, they're confined into a fucking room and all get to interact together.
This episode has is hugely influenced by the Twilight Zone episode The Shelter, which I just watched for the first time a few days ago, and it is pretty, I love just the sheer melodrama of the Twilight Zone. Everyone is overacting to the rafters, but it's a story about a guy who has prepared for, you know, Armageddon.
All the townspeople make fun of him.
Yeah, and then he is safe, but then they try to break down his shelter. They do, and it ends with everything being a false alarm, and he is very sanctimonious about it. He's like, I can't believe you would do this to me.
We avoided a
problem. Neighbors.
We avoided a bomb,
yeah,
but they destroyed us anyway.
Thank you, thank you.
And I have a clip from it because it has a mind-blowing appearance by someone you might recognize.
Why don't we just go down to his basement and break down the door?
Frank, wait a minute, Frank, wait a minute. We can't all fit in that bomb shelter. We'd be crazy to even try.
Why don't we pick out one family, draw lots of something?
What difference would it make? I keep telling you, he won't let anybody in.
We could all go down there and tell him he's got the whole street against him. We could do that.
What good would it do? I keep telling you, even if you break down the door, we can't all fit in that bomb shelter. We'd be killing everybody for no reason.
It saves the life of even one of my kids. I call that good reason.
Jerry, you know him better than any of us. You're his best friend. Go down there again. Talk to him. Plead with him. Tell him to pick out one family. We'll draw lots or something.
One family? Meaning yours, Marty, huh?
Why not? And I've got a 3-month-old baby.
What difference does that make? Is your baby any more precious than one of my kids?
I never said that. Look, if you're going to argue about who deserves to live more than the next one...
You shut your mouth, wife!
Get easy, Frank.
Let go! That's the way it is when the foreigners come over here.
Whoa!
Pushy, grabby, semi-Americans!
Oh, you garbage-brained idiot!
Yeah,
garbage-brained!
Garbage-brained idiot. I had to get the whole thing.
No, it's
I
great.
Gotta say, it's a little embarrassing. I have a semi-American right now.
that one guy is vaguely non-white, but I just love the weird cadence. It's almost like Rick and Morty where they say their name, so it's like, Frank, you gotta listen! Frank, listen to reason, Frank! Frank, you gotta hear me out, Frank!
It's because it's an anthology episode. You haven't seen these characters before, and if you listen closely to that again, I should have told you earlier, that's Jack Albertson, Grandpa Joe from Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
I watched it. Doesn't look like that guy, but like every time I turned my head and heard that voice, I was like, "That's."
It sounds like yelling at Willy Wonka. You're a swindler. You're a crook.
Wow, man. It's
a really, really good episode.
It's great. It's way hammy, but it's so much fun to watch these guys scream at each other for 30 minutes.
Yeah. Though reading post-apocalyptic books in general, like say The Road, what I learned is like you. Having a big, obvious bomb shelter or a shelter that everyone would know about when the world's over, you're just asking to be murdered by the strongest person who will steal all that stuff.
You are a giant target.
But it's also, and not to fuck with the Simpsons premise, a bomb shelter is largely for radiation. Mm. A basement will protect you from a blast. Yeah. A bomb shelter, there's no radiation involved in a comet.
No, I mean, that comet will just land with the impact of a nuke. So it'll wipe everything out, as we'd show. But
I'll say the Simpsons ends better than that episode, which is like, they bust down the door, and right as they bust down the door, the radio says, just a satellite, don't worry. And like everyone's like, sorry. I called you a dirty immigrant.
I like how it depicts people in a time of panic and uncertainty. And a president comes in to calm things down. Oh, what a more glorious time.
Only in fiction. Only. So this episode starts with a Cuphead couch gag. I can't not think of Cuphead when I see anything parodying that very specific.
The rubber hose style animation.
And just cycling through their arm movements.
Cycle threes.
Yes, this episode opens with the most propane explosion-free science fair of all time. Mm. They're unveiling a new weather balloon.
To top off our most propane explosion-free science week ever, our grand finale, the launching of a weather balloon.
Yay! Go weather balloon! Hurrah for science! Woo!
Hurrah for science! Woo! I can't say I approve of the woo, but the hurrah was quite heartening. Release the balloon!
Yeah, that's great writing for Skinner.
Skinner has some great lines in here.
I was going to say, this is a John Swartzwelder-written episode. I think it was really easy to see that we got, in season 5, there were two Skinner episodes back-to-back. Mm-hmm. One Oakley and Weinstein, one where he's just like, a lame nerd, mm-hmm. and the other one where he is a cruel, petty man. And I think this episode, Skinner, is kind of between the two, because, like, that I don't approve of the woo, but...
No one writes stuffy conservatives better than Schwartzwelder.
Yes, yeah, but he's also cruel and petty to Bart with his punishments, too, so I think he's kind of in between them.
And also pity what happens to him.
Very much so.
Yes.
And the design of the weather balloon, too, is perfect. You don't notice that it looks like a butt in his clothes.
I looked up pictures of weather balloons. There are some that still... are shaped like butts. Yeah. Not usually. They're usually
rounded.
Well,
has the weather balloon community been influenced by this episode? It's a chicken and egg situation.
I honestly wouldn't be surprised.
I believe it was Duffless that first showed off Skinner's huge ass when Bart threw the science fair tomato at Skinner.
Best part of virtual Bart.
Yeah.
Heine.
And yes, his reveal of, like, big butt Skinner than his... I love his bitter.
No!
I don't think I really captured the eyes.
Bart, if you have a failing, it's that you're always demanding perfection. If you have a failing.
Whoever brings down that balloon doesn't have to learn fractions.
Yay!
Careful, children. That's my car.
Wow, so cruel.
Yes.
There's so many times Skinner throws back his head and says no. And it's the only time we see that angle on the Simpsons' head ever.
That,
like, I've never seen that angle.
I'm doing it if I sound bad in this episode because I was trying to do it live. But
you can see, like, the bottoms of his molars and everything.
Yeah.
Just like
this. I gotta say, Bob Anderson, this is probably his best directorial work. Like, there's little things he does that are like tiny bits of animation, like, especially like when Skinner will point at Bart, there's like a little, he could just do like a straight arm point, but there's kind of an upturn of his finger. There's just little stuff to that, including the breaking of the window and the little dents in it and stuff.
I think the opening of this episode is the closest you get to perfect.
Like, yes,
every line works, every joke works, everything's, there's subtlety, things occur off and on screen.
Bart should get in trouble for doing that, but he also, like, maybe the art department of Springfield Elementary should commit him on making such a uncanny resemblance.
And I think the bullies breaking Skinner's windows is more important than a weather balloon that is defaming Skinner's ass.
Nelson should have gone to jail for that. He's like, well, I'm calling the cops, Nelson. I just saw you break my window. But then for some reason, the government gets involved, too.
Iraqis again, launching Sidewinder missile. Missed him. Launching second Sidewinder missile.
This is what happens when you cut money out of the military and put it into healthcare.
It's a good program. Just give it a chance. That's all I ask.
What an odd joke.
Well, I love the visual of these guys want to continue arguing so much, even though they fell and probably broke both their legs. They're like, nope, we got to keep fighting.
But this is when Hillary Clinton was trying to launch universal health care, right?
Yes, I mean, it's a...
Or post that.
It's a standard belief that when Democrats are in charge, they'll cut the military and put it in Social Security, which who would do that? Yeah. But
Military is health care.
But also, that never happens. Like, Bill Clinton did not cut military spending in any real way. Obama certainly did not.
I think
he
just gave the military $800 billion a few months ago.
Not to be political, but it's a good argument, especially for, like, the trans ban in the military. It's the surgeries, and, like, there is no proof in the history of this country that we have a problem with military overspending.
Right.
If anything, they're overspending on Viagra.
Yes. Yeah. We just called for a $500 billion increase, and we're not involved with any conflict.
Yeah, and we have a military that is bigger than the other eight, the next eight combined. It's like, but I do like that joke. Just the visual of Iraqi fighter jet over
Willy.
The silhouette of Willy is so... That's like that's a great gag.
It seems like a hyper-conservative joke, but there's a joke in there about how a lot of this military equipment never works.
Yeah.
It never has to.
Yeah,
it fails on three different levels.
Yes.
Finding the Iraqi
recognition,
jet,
heat-seeking,
and then the parachute.
And I think there's also jokes in here about how they're trying to make this as easy as possible for people flying the planes. And we just did a Talking Critic where in that episode it was like sort of like a video game.
Yeah, it was
a
flashback
to
the Iraq Desert Storm. When I say Iraq War, I have to be specific. The Desert Storm.
I think, and also in Hot Shots, there's a joke like that too, where the heads-up display is like a Donkey Kong style game.
Arrested Development season 4.
Yeah.
Well, I actually love that joke because it's so insanely dark that that Buster is the best soldier because he thinks it's a video game and it's not real, and everyone else around him is like, you just killed that whole family. He's like, yeah, I did great.
So it's a lot like Ender's Game then.
And Guardians of the Galaxy 2. Where the entire race just plays video games that is shooting down.
That sounds like social commentary to me.
Then Bart gets caught with his... I love the kind of writerly joke about, like, at an alternate pitch, Buttzilla.
Yeah, it's like it's almost like patent pending, sort of. It's just like copyright Bart Simpson.
Notarized photos. He went to an office to be like, can this be official that I made this?
So now Skinner is going to make Bart aid science.
I am going to punish you for this, Bart. And it won't just be a simple caning this time.
Yep.
Because you have impeded science, you must now aid science. Yes. Starting tomorrow, you will assist me with my amateur astronomy, taking down coordinates, carrying equipment, and so forth. 4:30 in the morning.
There's a 4:30 in the morning now?
And this is how I feel every time I wake up before 6 a.m.
Me too.
Top of the hour, time for the morning news. But of course, there is no news yet. Everyone's still asleep in their comfy, comfy beds. Good night, everybody.
Every time I have to wake up early, I think of those two lines back to back.
Yeah, 4:30 is just the most uncomfortable time to be awake. Yeah. You feel ashamed.
Unless it's when you wake up in the middle of the night, like, oh, 4 o'clock, I still got 2 or 3 hours left. Or
that's
five,
beautiful.
Whatever.
And you're immediately resentful of anyone else in the house or apartment that gets to sleep, even though they have nothing to do with this. It's like, you're still in bed. Must be nice.
I just quoted this week. on Twitter, one of my friends was like, I have to wake up at 6 a.m. for a flight. And I'm like, boom. The radio thing, the radio gag,
comfy,
like
comfy bed.
Which is probably a cruel thing to tweet to them, but I was like, gotta do it. It's like mandatory for me.
I do like the bit with Marge telling him to wash off a stuffed pepper in the garbage. Nothing is more disgusting to me than a stuffed pepper to begin with. Maybe stuffed cabbage is worse, but just thinking about
the trash now.
And like Marge, one of the most caring TV moms ever, is like, just take garbage.
Even at 4 a.m., she's like,
I'm
I
sleepy.
Can't think.
Eat garbage.
So that caning, though, that is a reference to
Michael Fay.
Michael Fay, who in 1994 was going to be caned in Singapore.
Wait two episodes. There's an entire episode based on this premise, Bart versus Australia.
It's funny they have this one-off line about it, and then they'll... Bart versus Australia is all of that. Yeah. But
he did some graffiti in Singapore and he was sentenced to being caned, which is a government mandated spanking.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, Singapore is really not into graffiti and
expression.
But also that guy would later be arrested for like pot possession and also for huffing paint. Michael Fay's had a bad life. Yeah. But
I mean, that was a cruel thing, but it did give birth to the Singapore cane in wrestling, one of the best things. And it never makes sense why there are canes underneath a wrestling ring. Like, why
is
this weapon there?
It just became a thing. Well, the quick history on it is that ECW was run by Paul Heyman, who always wanted to be cutting edge. And he's like, we got to rip stuff from the headlines. And so they have basically this classic thing that's happened in wrestling a million times, a respect match where it's just a grudge match where the other guy... If you win, they have to do something, and if they win, you have to do something. And this was a Singapore cane match where the loser will be caned 10 times. And when the audience had to see it, the good guy lost due to cheating, and he basically, like, he just says, thank you, sir, may I have another? And, like, you're seeing welts on him. You're like, this is horrible, but it made everybody love Tommy Dreamer.
It's one of the most satisfying wrestling weapons, too, because it just has that thwack noise.
Now
and
it's just a
bends.
Cane. They do not call it a Singapore cane anymore, but it's actually a foreign object in the parlance of wrestling in that it is from Singapore.
When we get to Bart vs. Australia, I want to let the Weird Al song explain what happened. Because that's the best way to learn about that. Lorena Bobbitt, Nancy Kerrigan. It's all there.
A lot of other references in between there. I try to look up the generator bike light because I still have never seen one, but they do exist. Still and look exactly like that. I want to see if anybody
I never did.
On the commentary, David Merkin was like, remember those in the 60s? They never worked. Like, I think it was
I
a reflection
like they snuck
on...
in a 70s joke into the 90s.
Well, and also the Skinner damning the inventor of helium.
Yes.
Jules Janssen really did discover helium.
That's the distinction. You can't invent helium.
It's not a man-made gas.
But he's actually a fellow astronomer.
That's right.
Skinner, so explain why I liked it. He discovered it through just looking at the stratosphere August 18th, 1868.
To also see the part about Principal Kohotek.
Yes.
So, little boy of his.
Well, so, yeah, first off, the implication is that Skinner has murdered Principal Kohotek and his son.
Or did something to their voice boxes.
Yes.
Yeah. I always thought Principal Kohotek's boy was like, he had a bar too.
I see.
I couldn't find an explanation for Kohotek's boy.
Well, yeah, so the comic Kohotek was a big deal. Well, it was kind of a flop.
It's exactly what this episode is.
Pretty much, yeah, except much more stuff happened in this episode than in 73.
Yeah, in 1973, I believe it was called the Comet of the Century, discovered by Czech astronomer Lubos Kohotek, and it pretty much dissipated upon entering Earth's atmosphere.
Principal Kohotek is named after another comet?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Well, an astronomer, yeah.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that's why Skinner's like, well, yeah, then I'll get Comet Skinner, like just like Kohotek got. Yeah, which would explain that Skinner was watching the skis in 1973
Astronomer and science nerds, this all occurs way too quickly. The comet was discovered in, like, March, and all this occurred in December of 73. Mm. It took forever to see the results.
But the only joke that falls flat to me in this entire episode is the constellation jokes. I feel like every animated comedy has done this.
I really
it's basically
like
the
race.
Same. The cherry race was good,
it's just like one star, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And I mean the
Three Stooges gag.
But constellations are stupid.
Yes, they
were interpreted by morons, and they're so ambiguous they don't make any sense. You're just memorizing shapes.
I think the superior constellation Simpsons joke is where Homer names every constellation the cowboy.
Jerry the cowboy, and that's Alan the cowboy.
Yes.
Yeah. Brother from another planet.
I don't know. I'm not into those Three Stooges joke. I was like, yeah, I get it. The Three Wise Men. You guys love the Stooges.
I got that joke in 1995. I was very happy about it.
I know who that is. Yeah.
And I also like Skinner setting up the tedium of looking at the sky, because it really sets up, if you're a Futurama viewer, the episode where Bender meets God, or maybe not God, and to know how impossible it is to search the entire universe, even just to look at every part of the sky.
I gotta ask here, is this the first instance of a cellular telephone on The Simpsons?
I don't think so.
I can't imagine that it is, but he says it by name. And like, as an audience member, you just accept, there's portable phones now. And I do find it weird when you watch a modern Simpsons episode and they all have smartphones.
It's a big-ass phone with an antenna. I remember that. Like,
no, it's definitely a very early 90s one. Maybe Unky Herb used it. I'm trying to think of, like, a rich, regular guy who used it. But it might have also been hard to tell if it was a cordless phone or not.
I think it was just
cordless phones.
It was not predicting, but showing the beginning of mobile phones, where it wasn't just for rich people. It was something Skinner has.
Well, though it had to be rather expensive for Skinner. I think that shows him being like, that's how obsessed he is.
Dedicated.
That he has no money, and instead of, like, perhaps paying rent on his own place to not live with his mother, he would rather pay a giant cell phone bill in the 90s.
Not to drag it out, the first time I saw that particular model of phone was in the movie Hook. Because Robin Williams' Peter Pan was a work-obsessed man, and he had a retractable antenna flip-out phone.
Yeah. Which is more advanced than the Zach Morris cell phone, which is just a
like a military phone.
Yes.
Yeah. I also just love that Bart, like, Skinner isn't even listening to Bart anymore. He says, like, hell no.
Good.
Just his rising thing, too, like, 16 degrees declination. No sighting. it's great. And from a storytelling perspective, I love this episode. Everything makes, like, almost everything makes logical sense, especially, like, the end result is that Bart has to see this comet and he has to immediately claim it for himself. Well, how does he do that? Well, Skinner has to have a cell phone, and they could have totally gotten away with Bart not
hitting
that
redial.
That insert of redial is like, Bart wouldn't know the number, would he?
Not hit redial, like, in 10 years.
Yes, now who would ever do that? Like,
I was a little confused that he said, like, when he went to go get the balloon, he said, don't touch anything because this could ruin an entire day's work. But Skinner thinks that Bart is taking notes of every single setting that he took.
Well,
it's like, you could just go back to that, couldn't you?
I guess so. Mm-hmm. He could easily reset to it. Yeah. I think if he already knows the coordinates.
Stars are on a time, time basis.
True. I guess, like, if the telescope itself moved, that would be detrimental, but, like, yeah, he already have the coordinates. I don't understand.
I love the animation of the telescope. Yes. He just whacks it. It's such a mean thing to do.
It's great how it moves.
The way it moves is just so believable. Again, Bob Anderson did a great job. And then Bart not only gets lucky and spots it, But then immediately moves the telescope again. He's like, yeah. but yes, Bart seems to have discovered a comet and Skinner cannot take it.
Got you, my rumpy doppelganger. I've got it. Hey, what are you doing? Give me that phone.
Congratulations, Bart. You've just discovered a comet.
No!
Let's go to the balloon.
Balloon goes away.
Prez says,
"School for losers."
Yeah.
No!
That's got to be John Swartzwelder with the anti-Clinton sentiment.
He really hated Clinton. Yeah. That spin around him as he says it.
I didn't see anti-Clinton. Just it's such a dumb thing to say from a person of ultimate authority.
Any press could say that.
I mean, Swartzwelder thought people were going to lynch Clinton.
Yeah.
That he would be so unpopular.
That's a story that Al Jean tells a funny story about that on there that he felt that it was just Swartzwelder trolling all these liberal comedy writers by him saying, like, they're gonna hang him from a tree. They're going to kill him. They're like, no, they're not. He's not going to do it. But
are you sure he didn't say lunch, Clinton? Because that guy liked it, remember?
The Simpsons will be right back.
Hey, this is Sideshow Luke Perry. You're listening to Talking Simpsons on Laser Time.
We come back from the break and Homer is like telling a story that must involve a crime. Like, what did he do?
Like a hit and run, it sounded like.
At least a hit and run that nobody saw my license plate. But I forgot to go to work. And I wish I looked it up on Frickyag. Never again did they use the term Springfieldianite, which I wish it stuck.
It's as a fun little joke.
Yeah. That in other times when they've said it, they have said Springfieldian in other episodes. That came up in the Search of Frickyag. But the only other time they said Springfieldianite, that kind of gag reminds me on King of the Hill when battle over Arlinian.
Arlinian versus Arlanite.
Yeah. I prefer Arlanite. But I have an anti.
I prefer propaniacs.
Propane maniacs.
Propaniacs on the floor. and also Marge's reaction of like, oh, you've always been proud of me.
Yes.
Lisa's reaction. I also wonder how they were able to keep it. Like Bart was good at keeping it a secret from them, and he'd been waiting all dinner to just throw that newspaper at them just to show off, but. Oh, my God. Okay. These characters, I love all of them. I had to capture this is in two parts, but these super friends are the greatest.
Only one survives, though.
Won't you join us, Bart?
I guess so.
As the first student at Springfield Elementary to discover a comet, we're very proud to make you a member of our very select group. Welcome to Super Friends.
Huh?
Welcome, Super Friends.
I am called Ham since I enjoy ham radio. This is email, cosign, report card, database, and Lisa. Your nickname will be Cosmos.
Well, I'm done eating. Goodbye.
Goodbye, Cosmos.
Bye-bye.
I love Data. He will come back. Database. Matt Groening hates his voice, but I love his voice so much, and I think he's supposed to be Al Jean. He looks like a larger Al Jean when he put on some weight, and his voice is really annoying.
Well, I bet you're right.
Yeah.
We all do podcasts. Mm-hmm. What is your nerd voice? When I do a nerd voice, it's very Professor Freaky with the talking and the nasally.
I know you have a nerd voice. To my own voice pretty much, but
like, do your nerd voice. You're doing an impression of a nerd.
I would say.
That's more like the college nerds, I would say.
Mm-hmm. But it says Mario 2 is actually a Japanese video game.
Very authentic impression of a commenter, Bob. I appreciate that a lot. But I just thought that most of our nerd voices come from The Simpsons. Yeah. Everybody has their own distinct nerd impression.
Yeah, I think everyone's squeaky voice team comes from The Simpsons for sure. Like, I don't know what I'm doing.
And only Tyler Wilde. Tyler Wilde, when doing Impression of a Nerd, does Database to a T. Adding in, if you remember Tyler Wilde on other shows, he does a perfect Database. I don't even know if he's doing it. He knows that he's doing it.
I love that extra emphasis, like, to discover a comet. And I also love Ham's self-satisfied, because I enjoy ham radio. They're all very satisfied. I feel bad that Martin is not. Martin should be a member of the Super friends.
I agree.
Did everybody else have a ham radio?
Yeah. No, I didn't know.
I built one once with my father. I remember it was creepy as shit. I don't know how
cool,
it worked.
But yeah.
But you... I'm picking up different languages, sometimes Russian. Or I don't know what they are, but I was a little kid. Don't remember how it worked.
Well, I like that one kid's name is email to say, like, well, who would have the internet? Only some dork.
He's known for his emailing.
Yes. Yeah. Cosines, look, if you like cosines, you're lame-o math geek.
I'm more
dude.
Of an email guy.
Get your graphing calculator out for that one.
Did you know that three of the Super Friends have longer names?
Really?
Yeah. So Database's name is Kyle. Mm-hmm. And I guess in a future episode, these guys show up a lot. Mm-hmm. Cosine, his full name is Cosine Tangent. And, and Report Card's name, full name is Booker Report.
Boy. Those sound like late season jokes to me.
Henry, I don't know if you want to mention it's your territory, but what is Super Friends referencing?
Well, it is a reference to the DC animated series with Hanna-Barbera from the 70s and 80s, Super Friends, which, though the song they sing is not the Super Friends theme song or any of that, but yes, the... At first, Filmation had the rights to televised animation for DC, but then Hanna-Barbera got it, which is quite an improvement over Filmation, though still not good animation.
Still terrible.
But yeah, Super Friends started out as a straight Justice League TV show, but then after a couple seasons, like, this needs more of the Hanna-Barbera touch, so they got teenagers.
Gleek?
Teenagers and an animal. So first it was the Wonder Twins with Gleek. And then in the next... it was Marvin and
Wendy. I got
Wendy.
It here. Okay, this is the original 1973 version. Please indulge me. All this makes me so happy.
Meanwhile,
and nostalgic for Cape Crisis.
Funky.
Here's Marvin and Wendy.
In the great hall of the Justice League, there are assembled the world's four greatest heroes, created from the cosmic legends of the universe. Superman,
woo!
Wonder Woman,
the most animation
Batman.
You'll ever see.
Yep. Come on,
Batman's power is picking up hitchhikers
and Aquaman. Those concentric circles forever. Oh, the greatest.
And those three junior super friends, Wendy, Marvin, and Wonder Dog.
Ooh.
Their mission, to fight injustice, to right that which is wrong, and to serve all mankind.
So I'm fascinated by this because just how often the rights changed hands, and this couldn't be syndicated because of DC ownership. Even as a Hanna-Barbera cartoon, they are now under the umbrella of the exact same company.
Yeah,
they can release it anytime they want, and no one gives a shit. But at the time, and I meant to find more information on it, they couldn't. There was a Justice League comic, but DC, I don't think, would let Hanna-Barbera call the show Justice League.
Super Friends
is the dumb title they came up with instead. I'm guessing in one single pitch.
Super
the Friends. Let's do it.
Yeah. Super Friends.
But then they felt like kids. It was the thing that always plagued superhero animation for me until basically the Batman animated series of like... Well, kids don't just want to see Superman.
Yeah.
They need younger idiot characters to be around them, to be funny, and to identify with. Like, but Wendy and Marvin suck. Nobody liked Wendy and Marvin.
I forget
and
Wonder
Dog is basically Astro, like, 200 years
earlier. Yes, he's Astro. He's Dino Mutt. He's all of them.
I forget which Laser Time we talked about that DC characters were introduced in the animation as backdoor pilots in the fucking Brady Bunch cartoon. Wonder Woman and Superman debut there before they get their own television show.
And yet I would tell you guys, like, watch Super Friends before the Filmation ones. Those are worse, though. Those are the ones that inspired Ambiguously Gay Duo. Like, they redrew scenes from the Green Lantern Filmation ones because those were so gay. But Super Friends sucks. The only nice thing I'll say about Super Friends now is, like, all those character designs in that 73 intro were done by master comic artist Alex Toth. Like, they hired Alex Toth to redesign them for Hanna-Barbera because Alex Toth, he made all these 60s Hanna-Barbera characters who were superheroes.
They were ripoffs of DC.
Yeah, characters. Oh yeah. And Marvel. Well, because in the 60s, Marvel and DC had a whole new Silver Age of comics, and so Hanna-Barbera's like, instead, just Yogi Bear, we need our own superheroes. Mm-hmm. We can't get Jack Kirby. Let's get Alex Toth, and he'll design the Herculoid, Space Ghost, and all the other piddly crap.
And the rest.
And the rest. What, Thundar? No, that was later. But anyway, so that is the Super Friends.
Sorry, I didn't mean to get us off.
Blue Falcon?
Yes,
Blue Falcon.
But I could talk... Well, no, he was a 70s one where they had to stick him with a fucking
a dog
too. Yeah, like Dino Mutt.
He was better on Harvey Birdman.
Yes. And not Hawkman.
I would watch... If I had a choice between Blue Falcon or Scooby-Doo, I'd watch Blue Falcon because at least he's wearing a mask. I was like,
yeah.
this is better than Jabberjaw, than Yapple Dapple. We had to watch all those things. We just had an interview with Ian Jones Quartey, and we had the same deal. He talked about how, like, a Cartoon Network, I'll watch everything that's
anything
on this. So
got.
We'd seen all of these awful shows. Mm-hmm. Like, Josie and the Pussycats is one of the better ones. Mm-hmm. Like, but okay, we did hear that Super Friend theme. The Super Friend theme in The Simpsons is a little different.
Perhaps some night you could show us your comet.
There it is right there.
I make it the point never to turn my head unless I expect to see something, Bert. Naturally, we can't see your comet in broad daylight and without a telescope.
But you don't need a stupid telescope. It's right there.
Oh, no, no. It must be coming toward us at a fantastic speed.
Huh? Don't you realize what's happening, Bart? Your comet is going to collide with the Earth and every living thing in its path will be killed. I knew you'd try to find something wrong with my comet, Lisa. You've always been petty and small, right from the beginning.
We must alert the proper authorities.
To the observatory!
Uh-huh. We are the Super Friends!
Hey, shut up.
another runner from the David Merkin era, a character just saying shut up and the scene ends.
It's almost my line of the show.
Yeah,
but
Shut up.
But just how dweeby. I love their lines that they think they're in an action film, but they're saying it so dweebily.
Like very sing-songy.
To the observatory!
Yeah.
This isn't right at all!
The one thing I notice is like this is very much an older perspective on nerds where their skills are associated with intelligence or technology. There's no video game nerd, comic book nerd, no anime nerd,
pop figure collector nerd.
It's like,
and they let Lisa be part of their group instead of telling her
that's also
she
true.
Sucks. Like,
wait, does Lisa have a? What's her?
Her name's Lisa.
Yeah.
Okay,
she doesn't have a code name, but they actually let a girl into
the girl
their dork group. Yeah. Well, it's just. I also, that now I never even thought about Database Al Jean. He absolutely is. And I think, too, I mean, this is at a time when they were not happy with the critic either. So
yeah.
I could see it being a slight dig. And yeah, you talked about how Groening hated him. I think that's why Database is a major character in Lemon of Troy, because Groening was like, please don't use him again. They're like, well, okay, then we've already got Martin, but we need another dork here. Yeah. Actually, they bring three geeks with them on Lemon of Troy. It's like, you got two geeks. You don't need Database.
Extra geeks.
I always mix up Database's joke about not turning around with Milhouse has one where he leaves him open to the dreaded Purple Nurple and Wedgie and whatever.
Rear Admiral, which they made up. We don't know what it means, but it sounds sinister.
Dreaded Rear Admiral. Then we get the Doomsday Whistle, and that is another like classic Abe and Jasper in front of literally the general store.
In rocking chairs.
Yes. They've been blown for nigh on 3 years.
That never shows up again, does it?
No, I don't think they have had the Doomsday Whistle since then, even though they've had many causes to play it.
I meant that general store. That's straight out of a Western.
Yeah. I think there's multiple jokes on Rocky and Bullwinkle of that, too, like of just them running by the old men at the general store, which you'd think in the 60s probably still actually existed.
I think they had to harken back to a time where America thought it was on the verge of obliteration on a daily basis, hence that Twilight Zone episode. Only now do we know how they felt.
I know, yeah. It was nice living without a nuclear cloud over our heads. It was a good time.
They mentioned another, like, in the Wikipedia entry for this episode, they mentioned another Twilight Zone episode that has a similar, like, world's gonna end vibe. The monsters are doing it.
We watched that in school.
We did a play of that.
Wow. We read the script. It was one of our lip books. We probably had the same books.
It's the premise of my favorite Simpsons episodes when a town goes panicky and nuts, interpreting omens in the wrong way.
There's a guy who explains the moral at the end.
Yeah.
But in the Simpsons, there is no moral. But speaking of the town freaking out, now they have to deal with the comet.
First of all, yes, there is a comet in the sky, and yes, it is going to hit Springfield. you don't need to applaud that. Now, here's what we think the impact might look like. Show them, Jerry.
Oh,
Dear God, no!
Charred corpses.
Fortunately, we have a plan, Professor Frink.
Hi, good evening, ladies.
Mike Starling, what's the plan?
All right, just take your seat. Just take your seat. Now, working with former Carter administration officials and military men who were forced into early retirement for various reasons, which we won't go into here, okay, we have planned this defense for the city. As the comet hurtles toward the city, our rocket will intercept it and blow it to smithereens. Why? Oh, dear God, no!
That's always so great in this episode.
Mo can never escape
it's
this.
It's pointed on both the rubble, that's where his bar is, and then yes. It hits it on the model.
It's destined for doom, so and it is. It's so sad. Oh, this is only my second favorite Mo Town Hall outburst next to the brothel episode. Bonnie!
That's more of a Fred delivery than a Mo delivery. Yeah. But
that is more Fred, but yeah, he's the only one there to speak for Barney. Yeah. To be shocked by Barney.
I do love the little animation on Frink's slight
mahang.
But he just puts it to the side, we all know it, but just like mahang.
I like slightly authoritative Frink, like, just take your seat. Just take your seat.
He has some authority there, which he usually doesn't have.
Dan Castellan has screaming voices.
What's the plan?
He does it twice. The healthcare. I love generic Dan Castellaneta characters.
Yeah. So just give it a chance.
Yeah, it sounds, whenever he really screams, he sounds like the. His electric villain in Darkwing.
Megavolt.
One thing I don't get, and it seems like a very Schwarzweldian joke, which was like, with the help of military men who are retired, we can't talk about that. Like, that whole little thing there.
Well, you wonder, at first when I heard that joke, I thought it was a don't ask, don't tell joke, but I think like, well, these could have been guys who committed war crimes, or there's a million reasons they've been drummed out of the military.
I assumed it was Nazis, because all the Nazis helped us with rocketry after
the
war.
That is a strange love kind of joke, too,
I assumed, at the time, I had a good friend whose dad was succumbing to Gulf War syndrome.
Good.
It was a big payday for his family and him and his family.
I thought it was like dudes radiated by like nuclear weapons or something. But,
turns out it could be all of these.
Oh man, we should have said that Gulf War syndrome. That's the joke in the Sherman of Arabia episode.
Right.
His bones are glowing. So I also love the animation of everybody laughing at the comet and Lisa being the only sane person. Like, we should be still concerned, guys.
There is a generic Simpsons character in that shot that is Homer's body with a very handsome head.
And
it's very
Homer's
unnerving.
Clothes. Yeah. Like the white button-up shirt and blue jeans.
Pants. And he is up front in front of the camera. Too.
The only Homer may do that.
Yeah.
For several of the character, for the group shots, they have to dig out some season one people. Yeah. And it's a little distracting.
I think this is the most crowded Springfield has ever been. Like, it's I don't know, characters appearing for a long time on screen together.
Yeah. So this is another of my favorite lines. I think of this in political discourse often.
Yeah.
Will you all stop worrying about that stupid comet? It's going to be destroyed. Didn't you hear what the guy in the building said?
Don't you think?
Lisa? The whole reason we have elected officials is so we don't have to think all the time. Just like that rainforest scare a few years back. Our officials saw there was a problem and they fixed it, didn't they?
No, Dad, I don't think...
There's that word again.
Just love that. Homer's very like, there's that word again. Sing-songy display. I love it. And that was something, too. They talk about on the commentaries when they talk about Schwarzwalder that he would troll them about rainforest as well. He'd say, actually, there's more rainforest now than ever, really.
That doesn't make sense.
No, it doesn't. It really doesn't. But
he is a huge troll.
Earth is getting bigger.
But that is still how we think, too. Like, we don't think about the rainforest anymore. Yeah. Every cartoon, there's a fucking, like, $90 million Fern Gully cartoon all about the rainforest and how it's going to save all of us. And like, we don't remember any of that. Like,
where are you going to grow my Big Mac meat? Come on, find a better solution.
If you listeners,
there's nothing glaciers will just take care of.
Listeners are out there, watch the Captain Planet episode of OKKO that just aired, because it ends with like they got back the original voice of Captain Planet and the LeVar Burton to play Kwame. And at the end of it, Captain Planet is very clear of like, well, we tried to help all these people years ago, but nobody really listened to us.
I'm a useless superhero.
Well, he just says, like, and we're not in a place right now where we can even choose to save the Earth. We have to, or else everyone's life is in danger. And then just it just slams to the Captain Planet says. It's so
that's great.
All right.
So these comet watching scenes, I love. The color design is just gorgeous. Yes. You've never seen these colors all together
on the
show. The
gradient of the sky is something that they didn't really use after season one.
Yeah. Know, well, now we're seeing it because we've got fires all around us. But,
I was going to compare it to the eclipse. It's how seeing the eclipse when I was in the what's the path of finality, like that's what it looked like, the glowing horizon in a dark sky.
I was there too. It was so creepy for a minute and a half. It's just like, wow, this is not right.
Yeah, it looks like a 1990s rap video.
and this also feels different than modern day Simpsons because it's just them staring in awe of the comet. They're looking at the comet. I feel like in current Simpsons they'd be like, well, we need another joke here. Like we need like five more jokes in these scenes. Like sometimes just set up the doom or wonder of the comet. You don't need an extra joke.
They let the tension breathe without interrupting.
I just love the setting of like picnic chairs on the top of a roof.
That is very white trash.
I feel like the Simpsons have done it too at some other point, but I can't place it.
Before this, I can't really place it either. But yes, I honestly, this clip is very long, but I just love all of it. So
another return of the rake joke style humor.
Homer, what if this doesn't work?
Well, then I have a backup plan. See, while the unprepared are still sitting around twiddling their thumbs and going,
Dad, plan.
I'm getting to that. So anyway, they're going.
Dad.
So anyway, we get in our car and take the bridge out of town. Well, all the while, they're still going.
Dad, they're firing the rocket!
It's a lot to ask Dan Castellaneta to improv humming without actually singing a real song. Yeah. He kind of goes into Peter and the Wolf at the end there
With all the Simpsons CDs that they've put out, like, how do they not do like a musical accompaniment to that? Like,
just
jam on the guitar and tune to that.
A premium ringtone.
I also love like Bart's angry posture in Homer, like, Dad!
Oh,
like,
yeah, if you freeze frame on that, it's a great angry drawing of Bart. Yes, I love how impatient he's getting, just like, just tell us the plan!
And also, another amazing animation, the way Homer is knocked back out of his chair, and he's like, it's awesome, but obviously the rocket misses, and then, so, logically, it makes no sense. Is the town of Springfield surrounded on all sides by a gorge, and there is only one bridge that goes out
of it? It doesn't make any sense, but I did notice a sign joke that...
I never noticed that
there's
either
like,
before now.
You can see it for a tenth of a second. They don't freeze on it long enough. Only bridge out of town becomes bridge out, which I only noticed now after seeing this episode like 30 times
I remember them referring to this as a VCR episode, which you won't get, and I don't... I attribute that as a hallmark of The Simpsons, but I think it's something they actually had to improve upon. They didn't want to waste jokes, and while it bothers me, they linger longer on small things like that now.
Well, that was, I think, a big change. Oakley and Weinstein, I think, were the last showrunners who really cared, like, no, we're going to stay here all night to think of a joke no one will see. I think they really stopped caring about that kind of thing. Like, I mean, well, even in season 9 and 10, you'd have jokes like Stoner's Pot Palace, but they would pause on that and have auto-comment on it just so you'd have time to read it.
I think normally they give you enough time to read sign jokes, but maybe that was just something they had to cut quickly away from or something, but it was the first time I noticed it.
A lot of the only thing I can compare it to in a modern sense is Arrested Development, but Mitch Hurwitz credits that with the set designers getting the joke they were after. So like, we didn't specifically ask for a red doghouse with a beagle in the good grief scene, but like, somebody got the joke and it just showed up.
That's awesome.
That's awesome.
And that's not the specific one, but he said that's how he wouldn't even know some of the stuff was going into the scene.
I do wish the scene had incorporated Moe's bar getting destroyed.
Yeah. Well, I do love this act break, though.
It blew up the bridge! We're doomed!
It's times like this I wish I were a religious man.
It's all over, people! We don't have a prayer!
Oh! Great Harry Shearer.
Great Lovejoy Doppler.
Well, and the scene could end with that, but then they actually stick with this fear of it, of like, they show the bridge and then pan up to the comet. Mm-hmm. Like, it really enforces the danger.
Good act
like
break, and again, modern Simpsons, I feel like the camera would have been full center on Lovejoy, and his voice wouldn't have trailed off. It just... They just lingered too long, and I love this shit about early Simpsons.
All right. I think a lot of this episode, though, from this point on, I feel like they reused a lot of these jokes in the dome bits in the film.
Yeah.
But this, oh my God, Kent Brockman.
And
And like Icarus, the rocket foolishly soared too high and lost control of its servo guidance mechanism, leaving us with some 6 hours to live. So, let's go live now to the charred remains of the only bridge out of town with Arnie Pie and Arnie in the Sky.
With the bridge gone and the airport unfortunately on the other side of the bridge, a number of citizens are attempting to jump the gorge with their cars. It's a silent testament to the never give up and never think things out spirit of our citizens.
With our utter annihilation imminent, our federal government is snapped into action. We go live now via satellite to the floor of the United States Congress.
Then it is unanimous. We are going to approve the bill to evacuate the town of Springfield in the great state of...
Wait a second. I want to tack on a rider to that bill. $30 million of taxpayer money to support the perverted arts.
All in favor of the amended Springfield / pervert bill? Bill defeated.
I've said it before, and I'll say it again. Democracy simply doesn't work.
I love a few things more than a Southern politician saying poivet.
I like that they're both Southern guy politicians.
I mean, this is a joke about NEA grants going towards things that weren't completely wholesome.
Yeah, which I really...
Mr. Show had a whole episode about it.
I honestly hate any jokes about the
NEA. I need a porn shop.
Poivet bail.
That it is, like, even if we gave $100 million to artists, that would be nothing compared to what we spend on anything in the
They
government.
Peed in a jar and they put a cross in it.
My tax dollars paid for that. Like, your tax dollars also paid for that drone that shot everybody at a wedding. Like,
I gotta say,
you're not too worried about that.
Piss Christ is the ultimate troll. That's why I love it. Just like, it's so like, just like brain dead and how it shocks people, but I just love that it does. It's just like,
but it did.
It's basically shitting on the flag for Mr. Show.
Exactly,
Why are you leaning into the joke by pretending to be offended by this? You're letting him win. If you just didn't talk about it, nothing like that would happen
again. It's a great troll.
But the perverted arts, it's called.
Avoided.
And it's also, that is the clowns in Congress, Radicating. Yeah. There's no specific, I would say with the Southern voice, it could honestly be either side because there are Dixiecrats and Republicans. Yeah.
Only watching the show back to back with you guys am I noticing Ken Propcoffman's libertarian slant.
Which Homer will repeat like a year later that exact line. Democracy does work.
Yeah, that's right.
I don't know why I love it so much, but there's a vocal tick in there for Harry Shearer where it like sounds like he really leans away from Mike.
To look at his watch,
6 hours to live.
6 hours to live.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can hear his head turning back to the mic.
We do get a nice list. It's sort of a repeat of the Rock Bottom retractions list. Yes. It's the following people are gay.
But we're not going to read it all like we did with Rock Bottom because
it's
all
jokes.
It's all Simpsons writers, including people that don't work on the show anymore. They all had to sign something saying, it's okay if you say that I'm gay in this thing. They couldn't say that about anyone else because, you know, they could sue.
Well, in 1995, they would absolutely. I bet you could still be sued now.
I wonder if there are any writers who are like, no, don't put my name on it.
Yeah, perhaps. Like, I am gay.
I don't want even a hint. That's exactly who would protest.
Yeah.
You're just outing yourself.
But so, yeah, it's just Alf Clausen, Merkin, Jennifer Clinton, John Schwarzwalder. They're all on
David
there.
Cohen. Yeah, I think Al Jean or Mike Reese is on there, too. Ooh. Not all current staff members.
Fire Clausen and they said he was gay?
too bad he can't sue him. He signed that thing.
Yes.
I wonder if in there it's like, oh, we can also fire you at any time.
Well, got him.
Again, little touches the animation. The way Homer is like looking and right, like looking back up, writing down the names, like his attention to detail there.
It also makes me remember the Mr. Plow episode. Oh yeah, they were gay. Like that was intentionally written so you couldn't know who he was saying was gay from Leave It to Beaver.
But it's a short list of people who could be on that. But I also love the foreshadowing of Homer's prediction, like it will come true, and it's
a great ending.
You have to remember his specificness of the Chihuahua's head for one of the best visual gags in the episode. And Homer's like, maybe I'll be crushed from above somehow. But Homer has a backup plan that is quite a smart one.
Okay, if you're that worried about it, let's go down to the bomb shelter.
We have a bomb shelter?
Homer Simpson takes care of his family. Flanders, open up!
Hi-dee-ho, a Rooney, neighbor.
What can I do you for?
Get out of there. My family needs to use your bomb shelter.
Homer?
Oh, I kind of figured this might happen, so I built the shelter big enough for both our families.
No deal out.
No deal out.
I mean, ideally, a bomb shelter should be below ground.
Yeah, there is that.
And it's funny that Springfield doesn't have bomb shelters because it's a like late 19th century town that was built. And in my town, which is sort of like Springfield, when you drive downtown, all of the old buildings have a sign that says fallout shelter on them.
Shit.
And that there's a fallout shelter inside. So like everyone had to be prepared at some point
We should go there and check it out. I love bomb shelter. One of my friends rented a house with like, they didn't even know it when they rented it, that there was a bomb shelter in there. And it was like filled with water and it was bunk beds. It looked terrifying. Mm. Like an oil silo built like buried underground. I don't know. I'm obsessed with the atomic age and the fear.
I think Flanders, it's weird that Flanders would have a bomb shelter. It can't be for the, you know, Armageddon because he should be sure. Mm-hmm. He's like, well, I'm getting raptured. What do I need a bomb shelter for?
He's notably looked forward to the
four elephants of the apocalypse. Yeah. He's totally Judgment Day.
There's also a guy who does his taxes on January 1st.
That's true. An overprepared man.
Yeah, that's true. And, well, and then he would spend all that extra money to make it big enough for The Simpsons.
Yeah.
And Homer is still, Homer's callousness toward Ned is amazing.
Get out.
I love it. Just,
yes, but Homer is not the only person without a shelterini.
Well, howdly doodly, neighbors. Shouldn't you be in your shelterinis by now?
We haven't got shelterinis. We want in yours.
Well, sorry, the shelter's kind of full.
Really? Oh. Well, we'll just go off someplace and die then. Thanks.
Wait! You know, I may regret this when our air runs out and we can't whistle or stay alive, but...
Oh, what the heck? And David said earlier this felt like a Halloween episode.
Yeah.
This is where most of the Twilight Zone shelter
is.
The shot of the door opening and the people behind it is very much taken from that episode.
Yeah. I love all the crowd together. It's also something that like Quimby and Krusty couldn't get away. Like they should have had private helicopters or something.
Was Brockman in there? Because Artie Pye has that helicopter.
Yeah. He wasn't in there.
Yeah. No, Brockman wasn't there. Yeah. No. But...
I love this episode. I feel like a missed opportunity is not having Skinner in the bomb shelter to tie the two parts of the episode together. He's oddly missing.
And it is weird. I mean, the show is kind of bookended. Like, it's a Skinner story for the first third, and it's a Flanders story for the last third.
Mm-hmm.
They're both kind of absent in those other sequences.
It is a little bit divided. This episode depends
on... Apparently Bart.
That's true. This episode really depends on you knowing Springfieldianites very well. And then seeing Barney and Nelson next to each other, too, is like, oh, you guys...
There are certain...
You guys
same
look
clothes,
so similar.
Too.
There are certain combinations you haven't seen in the same shot before.
Yeah. And, like, I was kind of astonished watching this again, like... Oh, there are generic characters in here. Like, I thought they literally could have filled that with just
a couple shots have Waldo.
Yes.
That's a great troll on the commentary that Dave Merkin says, you know, nobody's ever noticed Waldo. I've never heard it from any person. It's so crazy.
If you're in the UK, we're talking about, of course, Wally.
Bah, Waldo's more interesting name than
it's a better name.
Yeah, come on.
Just turned 30, as we discussed in 3020.
Oh, my God, really? So then they can't close the door. Somebody has to leave this crushing shelter, and they just start listing all the things that basically explain, oh, the world will need everything I do.
Yes. Someone to serve drinks.
Yeah, someone to serve drinks. And, like, nobody could serve a drink before. But then...
We need gossip.
Yes, we need gossip in the future.
So then Homer comes to realize who is the most useless, and boy...
Wait a minute. We all know the one thing we won't need in the future. Left-handed stores. That's you, Flanders!
I'm terribly sorry.
Flanders is the only useless person here. If anyone dies, it should be him.
I'm sorry. Please forgive me.
So let's kick Flanders out.
Sorry.
Well, sir, sounds fair. Doodaloo, everybody. I'll scream when the comet gets here.
Oh, I'm coming with you, Nettie.
No, sweetheart. You stay here because...
Okay.
I might go mad with fear out there, so Todd... I want you to shoot Daddy if he tries to get back in.
Okay, Dad.
Okay. Hey, Sarah. Whatever will be. The future's not ours.
Yeah, one of the greatest, maybe like 3 seconds of The Simpsons is... Todd crying while loading a shotgun as Ned leaves singing "Que Sera Sera," like one of the greatest moments of comedy.
I gotta say, if there's room for people to write. And for Ryder Todd to load a gun, there's room for everyone to squeeze in a little further.
It's America, you know what the priorities
are. Suck in your guts, everybody.
Yeah. Yes, yeah.
But hey, guys, you have to face this now. Were we in this scenario? Yeah. Podcasters are not to be saved in the coming apocalypse.
No, the world needs laughter.
We'll tell all the stories. Yeah. We'll be like, we remember the media. We'll be the storytellers.
I would have loved to hear the rationale for Barney to stay in there.
Who's going to hand out pamphlets in a diaper?
That is another. I didn't get that quote, but him saying, like, who's touching me? Skinner is there.
Oh, you're right. He just has no other lines.
Okay.
Yeah, Barney has a weird, like, one episode crush on Skinner. Yeah.
But him throwing out Flanders is one of the meanest things Homer's ever done. But at least he's him apologizing to kids as he does it, it's even better. Like,
now I'm bothered by Skinner having no other lines, not addressing the comment at all.
Every second of this, all this sequence is fucking perfect. Yeah. I love this shit.
Could have been anybody touching Barney, but just that he's
okay.
And all right, let's talk about Que Sera Sera.
Yeah, let's do it.
So it was a 1956 Doris Day song written for and debuting in the Hitchcock film The Man Who Knew Too Much.
No shit.
Yeah. Yep. I thought it was like a 200-year-old song.
Standard. It was written for that film. It was nominated for an Oscar from that film, so it originated there.
It didn't win?
Song with lyric. That Oscars, goddamn it, will always let you down.
But this is how it is used in the film. This is not the pop music version you heard on the radio.
Here's what she said.
Come on, darling.
To me.
Que sera, sera. Whatever will be, the future's not ours to see, que sera, sera, what will be, second verse.
Wow, I just can't think of any other song written with lyrics written for a Hitchcock movie.
I know. Well,
it having a soundtrack you could buy or listen to in the radio.
Birds from Birds?
No,
actually, Rear Window has Birds. Mona Lisa, the song that's composed throughout the film, and then at the end, it's a finished song.
Oh, by Dave Seville.
Was it written for the movie?
It's by Ross Bagdasarian. I'm pretty sure it was.
Wow.
Yes, and I have to say, I want to know what our listeners think. I think this is a really boring movie, except for the one awesome set piece at the concert where Jimmy Stewart has to stop a sniper from attacking a dignitary or something like that. I forget what it is.
They're in Morocco. A guy gets killed, and then they kidnap Doris Day and Jimmy Stewart's son, that's who she's singing it to in that part there. And then they have to work with the kidnappers, but also work with Interpol to try to capture them.
Right.
And it leads to, yes, it is boring until the final set piece
with no dialogue
last act
almost,
of it.
And I mean, Doris Day is so talented, but she's like just too wholesome to be a Hitchcock blonde. She's just a very wholesome mom.
And I wonder that's why they made music such a central part to it, because Doris Day was a star of musicals, and this song would go on to be a big hit. It is a plot point at the end of it. So this is the beginning of the film where she's singing it to her son. To find her son while he's being hidden at this place, she sings the song and he sings it back to her, and that's how they find him.
I feel like
because he doesn't know who to trust there, but if he hears his mom singing that song, he's like, okay, I'll go to her. And it's a really good film, I'd say. I watched it because of this song. When I heard the song in this episode, my mom told me where it was from, and so we rented it, I think, within the same year of this episode airing.
No Hitchcock film from this era is bad. I just find it a little dull.
I feel like The Man Who Knew Too Much has been like three Simpsons episode titles, slightly revised. Not as bad as The Old Man in the Sea, but...
The Bill Murray... Don't get it confused with the Bill Murray film, The Man Who Knew Too Little, which is fine. Yeah. It's fine.
And by the way, it did win the Academy Award.
Okay.
Friendly Persuasion, Julie from Julie, True Love... In High Society and written on the wind.
Okay, so an Oscar-winning song. Yeah. And also, if you want a good covers of this, Sly and the Family Stone does like a 5-minute kind of like loose version of this song that's really good. Look it up, folks. Hmm. But but anyway, Mo plans to unite everybody. Is this line of the show?
Let's do it, yeah.
That's the joke.
Hey, I got an idea. We can play a game to pass the time. I'll make the sound of a barnyard animal, and you all try to guess what it is.
Oh, oh, oh. A
It's a pig.
It's a cow, man.
It's a pony.
No, it's a goat. You know, one of them lady goats. There are no lady goats. A lady goat is a sheep.
I believe she's right.
You're crazy.
Dar, what's it to you?
What's it to me?
First of all,
Stop it.
Can't you see the barnyard noise guessing game is tearing us apart?
Whatever will be.
Say, Mo, was it a duck?
It was a baby ox. Yeah, I love, so one of the things you don't get on newer Simpsons is the face you see on Mo, like a unique face for a scene.
If not line of the show, face of the show.
Yeah, face of the show.
It makes me laugh every fucking time I see it. I pulled it up just like
this.
You rarely see gums on a Simpsons character, and we're seeing his gum line, and his eyes are completely walleye.
His eyes get derpy.
Yeah.
His teeth have never looked worse. Like, oh, it's beautiful.
You think he's harbored baby oxes in his bar, like pandas and whales he has before?
I can see that. Yeah, he also keeps man under his bar as well.
He's intimately familiar with many animal noises.
Yes, God, that it's so.
Andale.
Hank Azaria just is credit to like making the best. He just had to invent that sound.
The best ambiguous barnyard animal.
It's like, but then Homer is right about everything, though.
I can't let that brave man out there die alone. I'm surprised and disgusted by all of you. Especially his children. I'm going out there.
That's great.
And it was a baby ox.
He's right, you know.
About the ox?
About everything, damn it. Hey, Homer, wait up. I want to die, too.
If you are going, I am going.
Me, too.
Me, too.
I'm out of here. Big reception in there sucked.
What did Dotto say? Something sucked?
I think it was radio reception there. So it's definitely reception sucked.
I want to go back and like parse out all the Walla Wallas in that, because I know everyone is saying something distinct and
Homer's
unique.
Like, does anybody care that I'm hungry?
Yeah.
It's so great.
Yeah.
So I'm getting goosebumps now remembering it. Just like they all decide they want to die together.
I want to die too.
They all just
give
up.
It's very reminiscent of the
Toy Story 3 ending.
I was going to say the Leftorium episode where it's like, Flanders, like, thinking everything is ruined, but the entire community comes together for him. And, they sing a classic song from the movie.
Yeah, this is a beautiful scene.
When I was just a little girl, I asked my mother, what will I be? Will I be pretty? Will I be rich? Here's what she said to me.
Hey, Sarah, Sarah, whatever will be, your future's not ours to see. Hey, Sarah, Sarah.
I hope you can hear Barney in there as distinctly as I can.
Yeah, with his great singing voice.
I just feel warm. I don't know about you guys. I just feel warm and fuzzy the whole time.
It's like, a very beautiful like character thing where he's comfortable with his own death and he's just going to sing the song that he likes before he dies.
Yeah.
It's just like he's come to terms with death already. And he's very comfortable about it.
It's euphoria I only feel during incredible turbulence on an airplane. Thank God, no more work.
Well, they're all just like, we accept our fate together, and it's all over for all of us, and isn't this beautiful? And just the way they like sway back and forth. The swaying back and forth is totally out of the Leftorium.
We mentioned that this episode requires previous knowledge of characters, because Flanders is not introduced. They also bring up the Leftorium, which we have not seen in years, so you have to be a Simpsons viewer to know what a left-handed store is in the context of who Ned is.
That's totally, it's a joke that would make no sense if you weren't a Simpsons viewer. I just say like left-handed stores, that means you, Flanders. Like, that wouldn't make sense at all.
Right, you'd have to have seen
When Flanders failed.
Yeah.
And the
Homer did a 180, about that store, where it was like, he saved that store, now he hates it.
Especially his children.
Well, Homer forgets everything the moment he did it. Yeah. Like, he's blaming his children for the thing he did. And that we talked about the gradients before, the gradient of the skyline as they're there, and just seeing them come up over a hill, all the Springfieldianites coming over the hill.
Awesome it's job beautiful. By Bob Anderson. I was looking at some of the other episodes. He directed 2½ Greyhounds and Sweet Seymour Skinner's Badass Song. So he's on some great episodes, I think.
Yeah, no, oh God, he's so good. But it's beautiful. I also love that they can undercut. They have a sweet moment. And they're still like, run! Like, they're reminded, like, no, death is here now.
And we should still try to avoid it.
Yes. But what's more terrifying than a comet is Homer being right about something.
Yeah.
Let's go burn down the observatory so this will never happen again.
I can't believe that extra thick layer of pollution that I've actually picketed against is what burned up the comet.
You know, what's really amazing is that this is exactly what Dad said would happen.
Yeah, Dad was right.
I know, kids. I'm scared, too.
Just it breaking
ominous theme to close it.
That it breaking apart in the atmosphere was a beautiful shot, especially the way Bart can just put his own comet in his pocket.
Yeah.
And it lands next to the Chihuahua.
Right by a Chihuahua.
A very realistically drawn, non-Simpson style Chihuahua.
Compared to all the dogs in the Santa's Little Helper School episode, it was this is like, it doesn't have the same like overbite that every other animal has.
It's and the true. Big Simpsons eyes, too.
Yeah. It's just a Chihuahua. Yeah. Well, you only see him for a second. And I'd say an underrated best line in this episode is Mo saying, like, it's burned down the observatory. Yeah. This never happens again.
And to talk about one thing that happened ages ago in this episode, but I did love that Santa's Little Helper and Snowball watch TV together in the morning.
Yeah, that's really great.
Watching Lassie.
Which was very much cute. On.
Yeah.
At 4 a.m., you'd see Lassie.
Pointing ahead to that, they'll have sentience and be able to talk soon.
Did we mention Taquito? Taquito. Like, I didn't notice this joke. I remember being called out in school that when Homer predicted the meteor would sink to the size of a Chihuahua's head, and for no reason there's a Chihuahua there.
Yeah.
That Chihuahua's name is Taquito.
Oh,
he appeared in The Radioactive Man when Bart wanted to make himself look taller. He's Bumblebee Man's dog in 22 short films about Springfield, and he was eventually revealed to be Milhouse's dog in your favorite season 28. The episode Dogtown.
Morris already has a dog. He chokes it when he jumps up in
the Maybe
enjoy.
He killed that dog.
I don't want that to happen. I don't make the rules.
I guess they named him in that late episode because I don't think he had a name before then.
It's the same episode where they named the other Super Friends.
Man, that is, I think, my... Yeah. It's my favorite episode we watched this point. I wouldn't call it what I think is the funniest episode. I actually think the next episode is funnier, it's more laugh a minute.
Fucking incredible and a meme generator out there.
Yeah, this is probably my top 10.
This is my favorite all around episode. Like, I think maybe I've been tricked by Dave Merkin on the commentary and saying it's a perfect Simpsons episode.
Yeah,
it is gorgeous.
I feel like episodes like these make me like the Merkin era more than the Al Jean Mike Reese era because they are more centered around one strong story instead of several stories, which I think is a problem we saw in The Critic when we're going through The Critic. So I really appreciate like a sole story that is given full attention by the episode, and that's what this is exactly.
And it still allows you, as I mentioned before, like it gets deep on three characters, Skinner, then Bart, then Flanders. Mm-hmm. And it's like, and those are three great characters that you want to know more about, so it's perfect in that way.
And this gave us a million great lines. Mm-hmm. Like, democracy simply doesn't work. Oh, God. Great, great episode.
Yeah, so thank you so much for listening, everybody. I have been your host, Bob Mackey. You can find me on Twitter as Bob Servo. My other podcast is Retronauts. That is a classic gaming podcast every Monday, occasionally a bonus episode on Friday. Go to Retronauts.com or look for Retronauts in your podcast machine, and I swear to God, you will find it. So please subscribe.
If you listen to this with ads, you know you can listen to it without ads and a week earlier. That's available on Patreon.com/TalkingSimpsons, where we have every episode a week early. We have the aforementioned Talking Critic, which we do every week, going over each episode of The Critic until we run out of them with Diana Goodman and Michael Raparez and a ton of other great things. Support us right there, but also support
Laser Time. Either our Patreon, patreon.com/LaserTime, or go to lasertimepodcast.com. You find this show and many others. Have a bunch of fun Laser Times. I guess we're out of the October Halloweeny goodness.
But in between all that Halloweeny goodness, we had our 300th episode, which was all about Robalosia.
Wonderfully stupid, but we deserve it. We deserve one for us.
Yeah, I can't believe he hasn't had like a reference on The Simpsons. Must be
disappointing.
Family Guy got beat him to it on that one.
Twice.
Not okay!
Oh, and we should mention, too, you know, if... Check your iTunes subscriptions,
that's
by
true.
The way. Yes, because
you just got dicked by the new iOS, update. And you're yeah. being unsubscribed, and you might not know it.
I'm going to say don't use that podcast app, and don't yeah. use iTunes. Find any, literally any other MP3 player, podcast player is better.
Overcast,
Podcatcher, if you will.
Downplay?
Downcast. $3. It is the best podcast program ever. It will save your life.
Just to type this thread, Robert Loggia didn't appear on The Simpsons, but they did do that scene from Big on The Simpsons.
That's true.
So,
close enough. Right. Piano. Right. Yeah, and true. I guess we're just closing out. You might be able to catch the last episode of Elm Street Nightmare, yeah. Which we went through the entire Elm Street series, not the prequel, closing it out at Freddy vs. Jason, which is one of the most fun movies
How
I've
get
ever
us? Seen. Skeleton powers?
that and our YouTube channel. We got a bunch of fun stuff for you over there, as well as shows like 302010, where we do occasionally talk about The Simpsons in 97 and almost never 2007. Video Game Apocalypse, the video yeah. game show, which both Henry and Bob have been on numerous times.
I believe we've done an episode that's kind of like, it was Eclipses, where it's like, games where the moon is trying to kill you.
Yeah, and Laser Time's a topic-based show, in case you don't know. The Simpsons informs a lot of that, yeah. but if you like the pop culture minutiae you hear on this show, there's a whole show dedicated to just that every single Monday. LaserTimePodcast.com or wherever you listen to shit.
Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back next week with Homie the Clown. We'll see you then.